Eta bhakya yamidura bishas kart dhari Sri Krishna nama kabu gawai na chai gahi nachi nahi ami apan ichai. Translation: Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking to the Mayavadi sannyasis of Varanasi, explaining to them why he chants Hare Krishna. I firmly believe in these words of my spiritual master, and therefore I always chant the holy name of the Lord alone and in the association of devotees. That holy name of Lord Krishna sometimes causes me to chant and dance, and therefore I chant and dance. Please do not think that I intentionally do it. I do it automatically. Purport: a person who cannot keep his faith in the words of his spiritual master but acts independently never receives the authority to chant the holy name of the Lord. It is said in the Vedas, yasya deve para bhaktir yatha deve tatha guru tasyaite katitha hyartha prakashante mahatmanaha, although it's translated as if in the plural. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. This Vedic injunction is very important, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu supported it by his personal behavior. Believing in the words of his spiritual master, he introduced the Sankirtan movement, just as the present Krishna consciousness movement was started with belief in the words of our spiritual master. He wanted to preach, we believed in his words, and tried somehow or other to fulfill them, and now this movement has become successful all over the world. Therefore, faith in the words of the spiritual master and in the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the secret of success. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never disobeyed the orders of his spiritual master and stopped propagating the Sankirtan movement. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami, at the time of his passing away, ordered all his disciples to work conjointly to preach the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. Later, however, some self-interested, foolish disciples disobeyed his orders. Each one of them wanted to become head of the mission, and they fought in the courts, neglecting the order of the spiritual master, and the entire mission was defeated. We are not proud of this. However, the truth must be explained. We believed in the words of our spiritual master and started in a humble way, in a helpless way, but due to the spiritual force of the order of the Supreme Authority, this movement has become successful. It is to be understood that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted and danced, he did so by the influence of the pleasure potency of the spiritual world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never considered the holy name of the Lord to be a material vibration, nor does any pure devotee mistake the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra to be a material musical manifestation. Lord Chaitanya never tried to be the master of the holy name. Rather, he taught us how to be servants of the holy name. If one chants the holy name of the Lord just to make a show, not knowing the secret of success, he may increase his bile secretion, but he will never attain perfection in chanting the holy name. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented himself in this way: I am a great fool and do not have knowledge of right and wrong. In order to understand the real meaning of the Vedanta Sutra, I never followed the explanation of the Shankara Sampradaya or Mayavadi sannyasis. I am very much afraid of the illogical arguments of the Mayavadi philosophers. Therefore, I think I have no authority regarding their explanations of the Vedanta Sutra. I firmly believe that simply chanting the holy name of the Lord can remove all misconceptions of the material world. I believe that simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can attain the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. In this age of quarrel and disagreement, the chanting of the holy names is the only way to liberation from the material clutches. By chanting the holy name, Lord Chaitanya continued, I became almost mad. However, after inquiring from my spiritual master, I have come to the conclusion that instead of striving for achievement in the four principles of religiosity, dharma, economic development, artha, sense gratification, karma, and liberation, moksha, it is better if somehow or other one develops transcendental love of Godhead. That is the greatest success in life. One who has attained love of Godhead chants and dances by his nature, not caring for the public. This stage of life is known as Bhagavata Jivan, or the life of a devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, I never chanted and danced to make an artificial show. I dance and chant because I firmly believe in the words of my spiritual master. Although the Mayavadi philosophers do not like this chanting and dancing, I nevertheless perform it on the strength of his words. Therefore, it is to be concluded that I deserve very little credit for these activities of chanting and dancing, for they are being done automatically by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eta bhakke ami dhura bishas dhari nirantar krishna nam sankirtana kari shei krishna nam kabu gawai nachai gahi nachi nahi ami apon ichai. I firmly believe in these words of my spiritual master, and therefore I always chant the holy name of the Lord alone and in the association of devotees. That holy name of Lord Krishna sometimes causes me to chant and dance, and therefore I chant and dance. Please do not think that I intentionally do it. I do it automatically. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manumapi Shachiputra Matra Surupam Rupam Tasyagra Jamurupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Giribaramaho Radhika Madhava Sham Prapto Yatsya Prathita Kripaya Shrigurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shriguru Shiatath Parakamalam Shrigurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sargaja Tam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakaram Vitangstra. These two verses which have been clubbed together here cover two main topics which Srila Prabhupada, in the purport, which largely but not solely follows that of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Anubhasha. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada has dilated on these two topics. I'm just going to concentrate on one of them. The two topics are faith in the order of the spiritual master and the transcendental nature of the holy name of Krishna. Before I get into directly discussing the principle of faith and how it practically affects our movement today, I'll take a diversion into talking about cancer, common disease in the modern age, in which in many cases people, they feel very healthy and everything looks okay, and then they feel there's something little wrong, they go to the doctor and they're surprised to learn that they have cancer. It seemed that they were quite healthy. They're exercising every day and going on with life as usual. But they discover that they have a potentially deadly disease. So, back to the principle of faith. It was on the faith in Srila Prabhupada and the holy name that this Srila Prabhupada's disciples took this movement all over the world. Srila Prabhupada had faith in the order of his spiritual master and in the prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there really wasn't much else to go on. He didn't have, I mean materially he didn't have an organization, friends, support, money. He had nothing by which one could be expected to begin a major international movement. I mean, even Lenin, he went to Russia with, he was supported with lots of money from the, what was that, Krupp's family or something like that. So, it's good help to have money, at least. Nothing, no friends, anything. But he had faith in the order of his spiritual master and in the Shastra. When his personal servant, Purushottam, left Srila Prabhupada on the plea that he didn't believe Srila Prabhupada, when Srila Prabhupada said that the moon landing was a hoax, Prabhupada said, I could understand that he wouldn't believe me, but why would he not believe Shastra? So you can see from this statement where Srila Prabhupada's moorings are. So with that tremendous faith in Srila Prabhupada, people just changed their whole way of life. And Srila Prabhupada would say, you go to Australia, you go to Japan. People who had never been outside of America, that young people in their early 20s or even younger, would themselves go with no money, and maybe just one or two of them, and go to some completely foreign place and chant Hare Krishna in the streets and follow the same formula that Srila Prabhupada gave to introduce the Krishna conscious movement all over the world. And it was an axiom. Translation stopped. Axiom means a principle that is accepted without questioning. It's just considered to be self-evident. There must be a Sanskrit word for it, which I probably know, but svata pramana, that word comes up in this chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, but that doesn't help you very much. You have to svata pramana, self-evident fact. Among the followers of Srila Prabhupada, with a few exceptions, like Purushottam, who left, but probably more due to his material desires than his philosophical understanding or misunderstanding, it was understood that everything Srila Prabhupada said was perfect, and that if we just follow him, everything will be perfect. And on the strength of that principle, the movement spread, as Srila Prabhupada said, like wildfire. You know that one, wildfire? You know that? In the forest, in the summer, everything's dry and hot, and if there's a little fire catches in, it'll spread wildly, out of control. So, Srila Prabhupada left our manifest presence in 1977, or his manifest presence was no longer available. And still the devotees, they were very confident and feeling very strong that This movement is very powerful. There's talk of conquering the world with the Krishna conscious movement. And a few months after Srila Prabhupada left, several of his disciples took up the responsibility of initiating disciples. And on the principle that Prabhupada said, just do what I am doing, the faith in the spiritual master which we'd all reposed in Srila Prabhupada became reposed in those individual gurus. So we were very confident but not very mature, and we thought we could do anything we like, breaking the law in serious ways, and we thought we could just get away with anything. Not that everyone broke the law in serious ways, but some leaders did some things like that. And problems started to manifest in various ways, because it became apparent that even though the guru is to be worshipped as good as God, because he represents gives the same teachings as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and although in principle, in one sense, the gurus in the disciplic succession following Srila Prabhupada, they're gurus, he was a guru, but still, they're not on the level of Srila Prabhupada, and several of them fell away. There were internal disputes within the movement, and many people, their faith in Krishna consciousness became shattered, and they left Krishna consciousness, because if you're supposed to have full faith, and well, look what's happening. Full faith in Guru and Krishna. Well, how can it be? And so they lost their faith in the words of Srila Prabhupada, or many more didn't lose their faith exactly, but they lost their faith in the application of those words, or the way they were being applied within ISKCON. And many went to Gauriya Math gurus, where the faith in Srila Prabhupada is not the same as that which was being cultured within ISKCON. Respect for Srila Prabhupada, but not in the same way, and sometimes subtle disrespect for him also. So Srila Prabhupada actually predicted this in one of his purports. In Srimad Bhagavatam, he states that when the spiritual master leaves, there is chaos. So, those that stayed on in the movement, they had to come to terms with various issues that, it was a theological crisis for everyone, whether or not it was recognized as such, that with the idea, well, if we just follow Srila Prabhupada, then everything should go fine. Although it's not exactly what Srila Prabhupada said. It's just like with Prahlad, it's not that everything went, he had to suffer so much in so many ways. The Pandavas were directly in the presence of Krishna, and so many things went wrong. So how do you reconcile all this? And then so many problems came up, the Gurukul problems, and eventually it was recognized that women had been mistreated within our movement, and various problems on various levels. So, how do we deal with all this? Is it that Prabhupada gave us something wrong, or we misunderstood what he gave us, or just don't even think about it, just go on with life, and just better not even to think about all these things. How does this work, that faith in the spiritual master is the active principle? Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada writes that faith in the spiritual master is the active principle in spiritual life. Then what has he given us? So gradually, some explanations started to surface within our movement for various difficulties that had arisen. For instance, it was recognized that women had been mistreated, although from what I can see, pretty much everyone was mistreated in some way or other. And women being a weaker class, maybe they're more vulnerable to that. Not that the movement was evil, this is my vision, but we were immature. Of course, I'm speaking in very general terms here, and when you try to analyze history, simplification is inevitable. So anyway, eventually some explanations arose that certain statements in Srila Prabhupada's books about women had been misused to demean women. And of course, some of the statements in Srila Prabhupada's books, they go very much against the whole way of thinking, of the whole materialistic way of thinking, which is to be expected if they are actually spiritual books. Because if they just said what materialistic people said, then they wouldn't be spiritual. It's not that he was deliberately trying to be opposite to everything that materialists said as a proof that he was spiritual, but just the fact is that what Srila Prabhupada gave was from the spiritual platform, and it goes against the whole way of thinking of materialistic people. So you can't expect them to very easily accept it or understand it. But that is the preaching challenge, and that's how the spiritual revolution... Otherwise, if it's... Where's the spiritual revolution? Unless you're going to change people's ways of acting and thinking. So the challenge of fighting is in the militaristic terms that Srila Prabhupada used, of fighting the materialistic society. Many devotees became tired of that, especially when it was seen that they themselves were, or we ourselves were, not as competent in fighting as we might have thought we could be, or should be, to fight the materialistic civilization. So this issue of, I'm just giving this as an example because it is a prominent one, that Srila Prabhupada several times wrote that women are less intelligent, and this is of course not his own personal value judgment, but it is there in Shastra also. So some explanation came up that, well, you see, Srila Prabhupada's attitudes are old-fashioned because he was a Bengali gentleman raised with a Victorian kind of education, and so that's why he said those kind of things. So it's kind of like, well, he's nice, but doesn't really know what he's talking about. It's like that Rabbi Hari Krishna came up with the conclusion, why is there suffering in the world if God is good? And he came to the theological conclusion, idiot, that God is all good, but he's not all powerful. He's a nice guy, but he's kind of lost control. So that made people feel good. There's a nice guy up there who likes me, but anyway, things go wrong. What can you do? Really useless theology. So it's something like that, Srila Prabhupada is nice, but didn't really know what he was talking about, and after all, we have had the benefit of a modern education, and people in the past didn't know as much as they do now. There wasn't so much scientific explanation. They're antiquated. I mean, this wasn't stated directly, but it's implied. They're antiquated, medieval ways of thinking, which we have now transcended. So these kind of ideas started to surface. And when they first came up, some of us thought that, well, you know, how could anyone think like that? How could they be so offensive? But we thought, well, you know, it's just a few people saying that, and didn't take it so very seriously. We couldn't imagine how much these ideas could enter into the fabric of ISKCON. At some point, it became revealed that on a private conference among certain ISKCON members, there'd been what amounted to straightforward blasphemy of Srila Prabhupada and extremely blasphemous statements about Lord Rama. And I was one of a few members of ISKCON who brought this to the attention of the GBC. I know there's lots of emails backwards and forwards, and unfortunately the GBC chose to do nothing. They thought it's better just leave it, you know. Don't do anything. Just forget it. It'll cause too much disturbance, this like that. So the cancer had entered. Cancer starts as a little disease, and gradually, you might not even notice it. It just grows within the body, and then when it's too late, then kills you. So you could see. What is the situation? Why am I making this statement that our movement has cancer? Well, just some symptoms that from recent times, just in the last 2 weeks or so, one sannyasi who I think had never visited that area before came to the residence of one devotee who, although he had a very well-paying job, even by Western standards, he was previously in America, now he's back in India, had given up his job and is going to live on the land along with several others in a similar situation because they want to follow Srila Prabhupada's directions to do so. So that sannyasi, uninvited, he invited himself, went to their home and said to them, don't do this, it's a very bad decision. What Prabhupada said, that doesn't apply nowadays. And quite convinced that there's a very bad thing that the devotees should do what Srila Prabhupada had said to do. He felt so deeply for them, and maybe felt for the movement, it's going to be a very bad thing for our movement if they actually do this. And then also within the last couple of months, one of my godbrothers related to me that in that same city, just prior to an eclipse, the president in the temple of the ISKCON temple there had said that we'll keep all the, this question comes up whenever there's an eclipse. Should we stop the puja and close everything, as is stated in Shastra, or should we just keep everything open? So the temple president there decided, he gave the order to keep everything going on as usual. And this disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who had been there when Prabhupada was there, said that the temple president at that time had asked Srila Prabhupada what to do in the upcoming eclipse. And Srila Prabhupada said, just find out what the most prominent Vishnu temple in the city does and follow that. And no surprise, because all the temples do, they close down the temple during the time of the eclipse. So that's what they did. So this disciple Srila Prabhupada informed the present temple president, who's probably maybe not even born before when Srila Prabhupada was here, and informed him of this, and the town president's response was, well, that was 35 years ago. As if what Srila Prabhupada said is no longer applicable. But I wonder what categorically changed in the last 35 years that instruction is no longer relevant. What's the big difference? The difference is not in Prabhupada's instruction, but in the way it's understood within our movement, that it's not important. By saying this kind of thing, it's like, you know, anything Prabhupada said, oh, that was 35 years ago. And then you just change everything. And then what's the meaning of his being the founder Acharya of ISKCON? Another example, last summer in Russia, some devotees came to me and told me quite innocently, not complaining or anything, that one sannyasi, he had just been inducted into sannyas, he'd come to their area, and the main message he gave them was that they shouldn't give direct preaching, they should indirectly preach. In other words, they shouldn't speak the message of Gita and Bhagavatam. You should preach something else. So, you know, I wonder why he took sannyas, because sannyas is especially meant for if anyone is to indirectly preach, it shouldn't be the sannyasis. Or if you are, I mean, there may be ways you could say roundabout preaching, presenting things in scientific terms, like Srila Prabhupada started the Bhaktivedanta Institute, but that's sannyasis are specially meant for speaking the message of Krishna consciousness straightforwardly. So this is, of course, I'm not a trained doctor, but I'm supposed to be a trained follower of Srila Prabhupada. So this is my diagnosis, that when important leaders in our movement speak like this and can train others, then the parampara is lost. May not be fully lost, but the important principle of faith in the words of Srila Prabhupada has become seriously compromised. And these are three examples that I'm giving. How did this all come about? Well, like I say, there may be various reasons for that. We could analyze that in detail, that it's easier to become part of the society than to become an alternative to it, in which we want to get, for instance, the approval or the help, or at least the non-harassment of political leaders. So if we smile at them, we're nice to them, we go along with them, do some things that they like social welfare work, then life's just so much easier. So there may be various reasons for that, why this has entered, these ideas have entered. One major reason why these ideas have entered is that they've been deliberately injected into our movement via educational initiatives. As one of the devotees present here once told me, he went for a teacher's training program under the auspices of one of these educational initiatives, and the person who was giving the class, who was actually like the founder of this whole educational initiative. One of his great statements, guiding statements into the class of aspiring teachers of Srila Prabhupada's books was to state that I do not have full faith in Srila Prabhupada's books, in everything in Srila Prabhupada's books, which sounds like a very humble statement, an admission of one's failings. But real humility is to say that I am very fallen. I'm not qualified to be a devotee, but I have full faith that Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee and everything that he says is correct. And on the basis of that, I'm trying to conduct my life. That's humble. But to state, well, I don't have full faith in Srila Prabhupada's books, that means to say that you have more faith in your own mind, you idiot, worm in stool. Sorry, I was speaking about devotees here, but sometimes I get carried away. Devotees, well, I don't know. So, it looks like bhakti, but is it really bhakti? If we say, yasya deve para bhakti yatha deve tatha guru tasaite katita hi arta prakashante mahatmana. That all the imports of the Vedic knowledge is revealed to one who has full faith in the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And your admission is that you don't have faith, then what are you going to teach? You're going to teach the words in an academic way? And how are people going to... You can teach in an academic way, and they can write an exam and get a pass and get their certificate, but the whole point that the imports of the Vedic knowledge will not be revealed to you because you've from the outset rejected the very principle by which the Vedic knowledge is revealed. And then it just becomes, you might as well do a degree in Indology or something. It's just as, or maybe people think that is something very, I don't know. Nowadays probably quite a lot of members of our movement think that would be useful in understanding Krishna courses, maybe more than reading Prabhupada's books. I don't know. Maybe getting more insights on that. So with this attitude, and not only attitude, but spoken intent, almost one generation of ISKCON devotees have been educated in on using Prabhupada's books for the education, but the underlying principle is that we don't have faith in it. And then what do you expect? And then the spiritual life, the energy. Prabhupada writes here, due to the spiritual force of the order of the supreme authority, this movement has become successful. So if you withdraw that, the spiritual force which comes from faith in the words of the spiritual master, if you withdraw that, then there's no spiritual force. And the movement cannot be successful. And it might be successful in having a chair at an interfaith conference or building temples. These are possible good things, but that's not going to get the blessings of this. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People are not going to become free of material desires, have a clear understanding of who is Krishna and how we have to surrender to him. It's just not going to happen. And so our movement may be successful in the sense, like you could say the Catholic Church is successful in 2,000 years of propagating something in the name of propagating the teachings of Jesus. So they've given people a very general idea of God, but it's provided a vehicle by which some individuals have to some extent imbibe the mood of Jesus, but on the whole it's been a sham. There's no actual God consciousness there. They don't know who God is. So that these educational initiatives that based on teaching Srila Prabhupada's books, they after going through such a course, one's faith in Srila Prabhupada should be so deep, because you understand, it may be that some of the things that Srila Prabhupada says we have difficulty in understanding. That's accepted. That's, you know, we're conditioned souls in the material world, and we've come for learning, and we're not supposed to blindly understand, and we do have many misconceptions. But then after taking the course, then on the basis of Srila Prabhupada's teaching, Srila Prabhupada himself was so clear in everything, then our faith should be increased by the understanding of why everything Srila Prabhupada says is correct. But instead, if we don't deal with these issues, like just like I'm told in some of these educational initiatives, I'm speaking in a very roundabout way here, I don't want to offend anyone in particular. But it's like the subject is put out for discussion, and then it may be concluded with no conclusion and say, well, it's a controversial point. So that Socratic method of education, Srila Prabhupada did this himself. He'd ask different of his disciples that, well, why this? Why, for instance, that about Christianity, Srila Prabhupada said, what's wrong with being a Christian? You know, what's our criticism? And different disciples gave different points, and Prabhupada didn't accept it. Then one of them said that, well, they're not following. And the Prabhupada said, yes, that is the point. And then he went on to explain it more. So this is the Socratic method. You ask, and then you don't accept different things they say. And then if someone says the right thing, you accept it, and then you explain it in detail. Or if none of them get it right, then the guru explains the point and gives the conclusion so that everyone understands it. But instead, if we just, like, on this point again, that there are of women being less intelligent. It is a difficult point for us to understand, and especially in the modern age, when we see there are women who are heads of state and scientists and teachers and international, what's that, Hillary Clinton going around the world getting ready to punch everyone on the nose and lining up America for the next war. And, you know, she's obviously a smart girl, you could say. She was a lawyer. So it may seem that Prabhupada's views were antiquated, because the feminist ideology is that, well, women, they never had the chance for education in the past. Now they've got it, they can do all the same things. So admittedly, coming from the background that we do, we may have difficulty in understanding these statements, but if we are to accept Srila Prabhupada as an ambassador of the Absolute Truth and not just an ordinary person who happened to turn his rounds well, and then he went to, you know, he got a little spiritual strength and he went off to America, and just by luck, things fell in place. If we're to accept him as an empowered representative of the Absolute Truth, it would be better for us to consider that if Srila Prabhupada says something we don't understand, there's something wrong with our understanding. And even if the whole world doesn't agree with that, then maybe the whole world's wrong, because the whole world does seem to be wrong in so many other ways, which Srila Prabhupada has pointed out. So how to understand this properly? Instead of just saying, well, this is as is done, so I'm told, in these educational programs, teaching from Prabhupada's books, because in Bhagavad Gita, as it is, very early in the purports, this statement comes that women are less intelligent. So instead of explaining it, and saying this is why. And actually Srila Prabhupada does explain in one purport, because the women are more prone to sense gratification. He explains in another purport that this, it's there in the Bhagavatam. Ato griha kshetra sutabda vitaya. When by woman is known as stri, what is that? Ato striya, what is that? Striya pungsa. Pungsa striya mituni bhavamita. So stri means that which expands. So when a man unites with a woman, then expansion comes in the form of children, one needs home, some land, money, one's whole social group expands with the in-laws, and in this way, women generally, they feel secure, and if they have plenty of money and they feel good and there are lots of saris or bangles and all this kind of thing. So that is the general statement. Not to say that some women cannot be very intelligent, even spiritually. The examples of Kunti Devi, of Gargi, she asked so many questions from Yajnavalkya, we find in the Upanishads, in Mahabharata. But in general, we'll find that there are rishis and not so many, very few rishikas, female rishis. So it's a general statement, but it's one that Srila Prabhupada chose to make, and we have to see, chose to make regularly. And we have to see the reason for that. We also have to see all the statements that Srila Prabhupada made on this issue. And in this way, we should be able to present it in a manner in which people who are not grossly biased, and most people in the world these days are, because it's a very sensitive issue. If they're not grossly biased, they should be able to understand it. And actually, I gave a series, a seminar, some maybe 3 years ago now on this subject, and explaining point by point the social role of women according to Vedic understanding and why women are considered less intelligent, and no one has protested against that. My point is that there may be some difficult things to understand in the statements of Shastra and those that Srila Prabhupada said, but we should not reject them or try to hide them away. It may not be that all these points are those that we're going to go out into public and say to everyone immediately. It's not that we're going out in public and the main thing, well, actually Srila Prabhupada said that we should do that, is that to prove that the scientists didn't go to the moon. But in our general preaching, it may not be the first thing we say to everyone. But, and these statements shouldn't be used to oppress jivas who in this present life are in the body of a woman. But at the same time, they shouldn't be ignored or swept under the carpet, as the English saying goes, because by avoiding to discuss them or by avoiding to give any conclusion, it suggests that either we don't believe what Srila Prabhupada says, or that that Srila Prabhupada himself wasn't very clear on what he said, or that it's something that Srila Prabhupada said, but it's like shameful that we shouldn't repeat it. So by failing to discuss these topics, just by failing to discuss it, even if we don't come out openly and say that, you know, actually this is wrong or something, but just by failing to discuss it and to give a clear understanding of why what Srila Prabhupada said was right, then indirectly we're creating an ethos of lack of trust in Srila Prabhupada's statements. And it's quite commonly said nowadays that, well, we can accept Srila Prabhupada's spiritual statements, but not his statements on material matters. Although he spoke on so many material matters, and the two are intertwined. Just like we find in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I made these four orders, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. We may say, well, we don't believe the descriptions of the universe. But then the descriptions of the universe begin with saying that the universe was manifested from the body of the Supreme Lord. So where's the divide between spiritual and material? And certain statements about, you know, the role of Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, and women, they're all from Shastra. So, you know, where do you divide what's spiritual and what's material? There is a divide. I mean, that's accepted in Shastra itself, that there's paravidya and aparavidya. Within the Vedic corpus itself, that a lot of the teachings of the Vedas, they are concerned with material topics, and the actual, or concerned with material topics, or with techniques, just like or understanding of words. I mean, the six Vedangas, they're all part of the aparavidya, or the mundane knowledge. But the actual subject of the Vedas, tad brahmeti, there's tad vijjigyasasva, tad brahmeti, that the real subject of inquiring about in the Vedas is knowledge of Brahma, the spiritual substance. So these kind of statements, it's maybe a convenient or lazy way of explaining over certain things. But the overall result is that we lose faith in the spiritual teachings also, because if Prabhupada was so wrong on everything that we can see all around us, then why should you have faith in that which we can't see? Yes. So actually these points should all be explained. There should be so many books explaining all these things, all the different topics. The members of the Krishna consciousness, the leaders of the Krishna conscious movement should lead not by avoiding all these topics, but by explaining them. Because if they don't explain them, someone else will explain them, and then they become the leaders, actually. I mean, it's not coming directly from the GBC or from the most of the gurus in our movement, all these strange ideas, but it's coming from others who have taken the trouble to explain Srila Prabhupada's statements, but in a way that I hear, whoever I may be, I who claim to be Eta bhakye ami dhura bishas dhari. I'm claiming to follow this statement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in relationship to Srila Prabhupada, that I have great faith in his words. So others have explained in different ways, and because of lack of rebuttal of that, then we have this cancerous situation. So there will always be, at any point in time, as long as the truth is being preached in this world, there will always be, in myriad ways, explanations which are meant to undermine the actual teaching of the absolute truth. So it's an ongoing job. There'll always be someone coming up with some different idea why this statement is not right, this statement of Shastra is not right, this Acharya is wrong in this way, this Acharya was materially infected. When I was a kid, I remember there was this, I think it came up for the first time, it was that Jesus Christ was a homosexual, and you have to understand his teachings from this perspective. You know, all kinds of just wild and mad ideas. But some people go along with it. And then they propagate it, and people are stupid, and they don't think for themselves, and it becomes accepted as normal. So many books are required. One point that when we say everything in Prabhupada's books is correct, let's examine that. Just like this translation today, as I happen to know Bengali language, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is mostly compiled in very simple Bengali, I can tell you that this translation that Srila Prabhupada has given is not an exact translation. Srila Prabhupada has, just like this, you can't find the exact, in the translation, please do not think that I intentionally do it. You can't find the Bengali words that will match with the English. But it's Srila Prabhupada's bhavart, is a commonly used term for what Srila Prabhupada calls purport. Often when there is someone gives a commentary on Shastra or the Bible or whatever, they call it commentary. But Srila Prabhupada did not use that term, he used purport, which purport is a word which means that to say that this is the actual meaning. So bhavart. This is the meaning of the meaning. This is what it really means. So that term is often used in the Acharya's commentaries. So Srila Prabhupada in his translations also, Nahi ami apon ichai. Well, I guess, yeah, actually that would go. That means I do not do it by my own wish. But the please do not think, that's Srila Prabhupada's, you could say, inserted words. And it doesn't seem that Srila Prabhupada was deliberately trying to even hide this. It's like in one of his translations, in the seventh canto, Srila Prabhupada refers to cinema songs. Because this Gandharva, what was his name? He later became Prahlad. Because he was singing cinema songs, he was cursed by the demigods to fall down. Now, Upabarahana, yeah. So, obviously, there were no cinemas in the heavenly planets. So there were no cinema songs, but Srila Prabhupada was using that modern term, which is also an Indian term, because in the West, then it's the pop songs or whatever, they're not called cinema songs. But Srila Prabhupada used that term to give the idea of the kind of mood that Upabahana was singing in, by which he got cursed. Instead of he was called to sing in glorification of the Supreme Lord, but to entertain some women, he sang some materialistic songs. So to give some idea of the kind of mood of those songs, Srila Prabhupada used the term cinema songs. There's another purport wherein there are various holy places in India mentioned, and how one gets so much spiritual benefit by going to these places. And right there in the translation, Srila Prabhupada says, and in all the centers of the Krishna conscious movement all over the world where the Radha Krishna deities are established, you get the same benefit also. And in the Sanskrit it would say, I can't remember exactly, Anyecha, something like that, others also. And Srila Prabhupada extended that to put, you know, it was clearly not exactly what Vyasadeva wrote. And Prabhupada wasn't trying to hide that either. I mean, he wasn't trying to say, well, actually this Sanskrit word means that. But it was his purport which he mixed up with that. So, yeah, maybe there should be books to explain all these points. And there may be some things which maybe you could say are like technical mistakes. Definitely Srila Prabhupada's language is not perfect from the English grammatical point of view. But guess what? Even the Bhagavatam itself, from the Sanskrit grammatical point of view, it's not perfect everywhere, as the Acharyas sometimes point out. And therefore, in the Bhagavatam it says, abadhavatyapi. Even though it may be not exactly composed perfectly according to all the rules, but it's śrīnvanti gayanti gurnanti sādhavaḥ. It is accepted by persons who are perfectly sadhu, perfectly honest, Śrīla Prabhupāda says. So It may not be also the devotees who are even teaching this, and maybe they have a very good desire to teach what Srila Prabhupada has given, but it's like the whole ethos has developed like that, and they're not even aware of the what I, who might be called an alarmist, you know what that means? Someone who, like, you know, overstates the case. Like, well, it's not so bad, but you make a big fuss out of it. So they may think it's not. So one of the devotees I know his full-time service is teaching on the basis of structured courses on the basis of Srila Prabhupada's books. One place he went to, some of the devotees who attended his course, they asked him that why, on this specific point, that why didn't he give the clear understanding of this statement, this, you know, women are less intelligent thing. He said, yeah, I'm with you completely, I accept, but, you know, it's just too controversial. That's what he said. Why should that be? Why should Prabhupada's statements be controversial within his own movement? Isn't that something wrong? One devotee told me that his guru had told him that he won't speak on all these subjects publicly, otherwise said the women, I can't remember what they said, they'd lynch him or throw tomatoes at him or something like that. But I thought, well, you know, you're taking the position of an acharya, you accept the respect and the facilities of an acharya, and as an acharya, it's your duty to, having taken that position, it's your duty to uphold the statements of the previous acharyas and of the shastra, and not just kowtow to public opinion. And what's the meaning of being an acharya if you just go along with public opinion? And if you as an acharya don't say anything, then they'll think that, well, what we think is correct. And then what Prabhupada says is not correct because you don't want to explain why it's correct. And when it's known that there's opposition to that. So, yeah, at least the gurus and the acharyas, if they were clear on all these points, then there wouldn't be all these problems, actually. So it's, you know, wanting to keep everyone happy is a, it is an acceptable proposition to some extent. But it shouldn't be our guiding principle. So we don't want to drive all the devotees away, but at the same time, We don't undermine what Srila Prabhupada has given. So like I say, on this very principle, and there I often quote this because it is a prominent issue within our society, that of women's roles and perception of women according to Shastra and Acharyas. And, at least it seems that the explanations I've given have satisfied many people who were confused about that, or at least I haven't had any overt, I'm not aware of any protest about that. So it should be that we're able to intelligently able to explain all these points in a manner that is satisfactory, at least to persons who are, at least to devotees who have accepted the principle of yasya deve para bhakti yata deve tatakuro tasyaite katita hyata prakashante mahatmanaha. At least they should be able to accept all these things. At least among the devotees, they should be ready to accept this. But if the devotees don't accept this, then what are we doing preaching? What are we preaching? And why are we distributing the books? How are the devotees going to get enthusiasm to distribute the books if we think that they're wrong or that they're anything less than perfect? We're distributing these books on the faith that Srila Prabhupada is fully empowered by Krishna, and that what is in his books are what the world needs, the misguided world needs for their purification. And by reading these books, people will get, who are in the darkness of ignorance, will get light. But if we think that Prabhupada is in the darkest of ignorance, then we really are in the very deepest, darkest of ignorance. And although no one within our movement would directly say that, but statements like this, well, Prabhupada said that 35 years ago, and that it's as if to say, you know, it's obvious that it doesn't apply anymore, then that may apply to everything. Then we have to write our own books, and they'll supplant Srila Prabhupada's books. Write books, yes, but they should be to support and uphold and magnify what Prabhupada gave, not to replace it. Which there seem to be some symptoms of that going on also. So, yeah, cancer. What to do? What should we do for cancer? Well, chemotherapy, that has, it's like very heavy, treatment in which you like kill all the cells. So what should we do? Go around and kill all the devotees who know? Oh, we should do that. Not a very good policy. Naturopathy is like, you know, it's just kind of, you just stop taking the poison which has caused or is nourishing the cancer, and you start feeding natural medicinal food. So if that is done, then gradually the body can heal and become healthy. But if it's too far gone, then the only thing is to hope for a miracle, call to Krishna for a miracle cure. And the other is Dehanta Prapti. You die and get a new body. So that's what Srila Prabhupada did with the Gauriya Mat. But I don't see anyone at the present time who's... well, one thing is, I think ISKCON is still recoverable. Maybe I'm just hoping for a miracle. But the fact is that Prabhupada's books are there. And if we encourage people to read them with the attitude, sarvam etam ritam manye yanmang vadisi keshava, everything you say I accept as truth, then Prabhupada's books are extraordinarily powerful. They can save the whole world, and they can certainly save our movement if we just accept them as they are. Now we've become more sophisticated than in the some, you might say, somewhat naive faith that we had in the 1970s. So okay, be sophisticated, be intelligent, be intellectual, be academic, and study them and show how they're to be understood in a way that nourishes our faith in Srila Prabhupada and in the Shastra, not in a way that undermines it. So naturopathy with a good dose of Krishna's mercy can still heal the movement. And that's a very hopeful statement. But because I'm not so hopeful of it happening very soon. But it's always possible. Srila Prabhupada said, even if all the devotees go away, then new ones, because of the books being distributed, new ones will come. So the cure for the world is there. And it's really a matter of whether we do it or not. As Srila Prabhupada several times said, if we are not the ones to bring in the golden age of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then someone else will do it. But this lack of faith in Srila Prabhupada, that the Gurukuls can't work, they were a failure, therefore we should send all our kids to Kami schools. And as they go to Kami schools, well, they want to celebrate Christmas, so we have to dress Krishna as Santa Claus, and, you know, just one thing goes to another. Where's the end of it all? The end of it all is we say, okay, Gurukul, yeah, there's serious mistakes. That doesn't mean that Prabhupada was mistaken, it means we didn't do it properly. It doesn't mean that it won't be difficult to do it, but we have to do it. Otherwise, what's the alternative? Send your kid to a Kami school and then, or teach them at home with a Kami syllabus, and then you end up with Kamis. Not devotees who can live by the principle of yasya deve para bhakti yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita hyata prakashante mahatmanaha. That won't happen. They can quote it, but they won't live by it. So, make a Gurukul, make the farm communities, and let's do it. And don't be discouraged. There'll be so many discouragements. What the karmis and what the devotees who are almost like karmis will say is that these farm communities won't work. There'll be so many problems. And it's a fact. There will be so many problems. And it will be difficult. It'll be austere. And you may wonder, what are we doing on this farm when I could be sitting in an office earning 2 lakhs a month in an air-conditioned office? And you may think like that. But then you have to think, well, Prabhupada wanted us to do this. And we're doing this because we want to give a better way of life to people in the world, and this is better because we're living with devotees and we're in a community which is dedicated to Krishna, not a community that is dedicated to make money for some fat slob somewhere who we don't even know who they are. They're just supporting cow killing and human killing and some demons who are exploiting us, and we think we've got a good job. So it will require great faith to go through with this Gurukul. By Gurukul, of course, if you say Gurukul in ISKCON today, it means a Kami school that devotees run with a Kami syllabus and many times Kami teachers. So real Gurukul means the syllabus is Srila Prabhupada's books. So let's do that. Let's at least try for that. Let's try for that. Prabhupada writes here, he, referring to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, wanted to preach We believed in his words and tried somehow or other to fulfill them, and now this movement has become successful all over the world. So there's a line for us to follow. We believed in them and we tried. Of course, the movement has spread all over the world, more and more since Srila Prabhupada left. Is it successful? Well, how successful it is, we have to see by quantity and quality. If the quality of sannyasis we're turning out are those who their preaching is, don't do what Srila Prabhupada said. That Prabhupada said that, but it was a failure. And don't preach directly. Then I would say our movement is not successful. So these may be controversial topics. They should be discussed. If I'm wrong in what I said, if I'm offensive, then please let me know. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Anything else? Difference between purport and commentary. Well, the word purport means that it's giving the meaning, whereas commentary means the word commentary sounds less authoritative. That's all. Purport gives the understanding that this is authoritative. This is what it actually means. This is how you should understand it. Commentary means, well, these are my comments, maybe you have some other ones. That's just an implied subtle difference, that's all. Hare Krishna! All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna!